At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
You have now arrived at Stadium and Gale.
Boys and girls, ladies and gents, welcome to another episode of Stadium and Gale. It's your favorite Uncle Silk.
It's Dan.
And Delatory.
Same corner, same time, beautiful Monday afternoon. How y'all boys feeling? Y'all good?
Yeah, I'm feeling good. It's hurricanes coming here to beautiful Tampa. As a resident of downtown Tampa, got a little concern about this storm surge. But if it's anything like the Miami Hurricanes, not much to worry about. Nick, how are you doing, buddy?
About to pull off the upset, Dan.
Downtown Tampa will be the Middle Tennessee State.
Yeah, for sure.
Bro, their coach, I don't even know his name. Didn't know that he was a Florida State player, alum.
He had no reason to know him.
My man straight up threw a haymaker after, said, my phone's blown up. People are congratulating me. He goes, and I have no problem saying this because we kicked the Hurricanes' tails. My goodness. Florida caught an L this week, but certainly a lowercase L compared to what Miami caught.
Oh, for sure, man. Boys was 26 dogs in that game and they should look like they could have lost by 26. That's how crazy it got. But nonetheless, we got our own problems. Hurricane on the way. I don't think we're getting hit with any of that. I think we'll get some outer bands, what the streets calling it. We'll get a little rain here in South Florida and West Palm. But I don't think we're going to get a lot of it, man. So prepare with some water and basic food, but nothing too crazy.
That's what we're kind of doing here. My biggest issue is I live in a high rise here, so I'm just a little worried about the electricity at the elevators and everything else. So that's the biggest issues when it comes to storm surge. A lot of Tampa is under sea level here. So we'll see. We're going to kind of play it by ear. So who knows, Silk, we might be down in South Florida knows? Maybe the next 8-12 hours. But
if the elevators don't work, your butler just carries you up the stairs to your
penthouse. I wish he's evacuated. Butler's evacuating.
Valet evacuations.
Okay. Sorry.
Yeah. So going up and down 20 flights of stairs would be the Dickens for piggyback rides per day. So we'll see. Like I said, it's all just kind of dependent on what happens with this this tracker over the next couple hours. Again, storm surge is my bigger issue. You can hide from wind, but you can't hide from water. So if you are listening, please exercise caution, safety, and of course, be safe. And hopefully this is a Mario Cristobal hurricane and not a whatever it might be.
Well, and then important for this week. So, I mean, this Eastern Washington game might just be cursed. It was supposed to be played in 2020. Was rescheduled for this year. Shout out to Jim McElwain. That's why Eastern Washington's even on the.
No, we won't. We won't be doing that.
You
can just say this is a game on the agenda.
Eastern Washington is on the schedule because of Jim McElwain. Not looking great. Depending, obviously something to monitor. But like Gainesville is so far inland that we're never going to get crushed by a hurricane. But first responders, emergency personnel get sent out to the areas that need them. You also can't have a football game without a certain number of firemen, police officers, SWAT, which are all first responders that would get sent to the West Coast and areas that need help. So that's something to monitor. I think you'd have to know by Wednesday, Thursday morning at the latest about the status of the game as we record and sit here talking. All systems go for Saturday, though.
Yeah, I would be curious. I don't know if the game is going to happen. If I were to be a betting man, I don't think that it does. I think that storm right now is tracking to slow down a bit on Wednesday and Thursday. So assessing damage and everything else, especially if it's as bad as it is, I just don't know if I see that happening in Gainesville. But we could certainly hope.
I like for Gainesville to pull off the upset, man. Game Saturday. Mark me down in Ben's little tracker this week.
Buy or sell.
That's
the game happens. Okay.
You got to start with that one, right?
Yeah, you got to. And then if it doesn't, then we can't keep track of everything else. So maybe I'll have a winning record that week. Who knows? It's been a tough go of it. As Jacob says, the buy or sell average is about to take a dive. Yeah, today was a rough week for all of us. Well, let's get started. As always, we want to shout out our friend Alan Horn with Alan Horn Insurance. If you're in Florida, Georgia, Tennessee, or Alabama, give Alan a call at 706-692-2888. Again, 706-692-2888. Visit him at alanhorninsurance.com.
Today is a good day to call if you ain't got
insurance. It is a great day to call in any of those states.
Yeah, yeah. We may get some insurance before this hurricane hit.
So,
because tomorrow's price is not today's price.
Absolutely.
No, and the next week's price definitely won't be today's price either.
No, sir. No, sir.
Get in while the bargain shopping can happen. All right, gentlemen, as we mentioned, the Florida Gators did lose to Tennessee 38-33 in a game that got very, very, very close at the end. The Gators, unfortunately, do lose for the second time in 17 years to Tennessee. Gentlemen, thoughts on the game?
Losing to Kentucky and Tennessee in the same year reeks.
Yep. First time since 1953.
Oof, thank you.
I never experienced that in my life, man. It's a terrible feeling. That's my initial thoughts.
It was interesting. So we can go down to the field there at 5 minutes left. So I go down and I'm like, this game is cooked. Like medium well, beef jerky, game's cooked. It's over. Florida goes down and scores. Billy goes for two, and we'll get into that. But Billy goes for two, doesn't get it. Florida gets a stop, goes in and scores again, goes for two, doesn't get it. And then I'm like, you could just feel the confidence in Neyland Stadium slowing down. Sure. And slowing down. I'm in the north end zone where Florida was going towards, and a guy in the first row looks at the guy next to him and goes, this is torture. And you could just you have the sense of, like, I don't know how it's going to happen, but, like, Frank's to Tyree is going to happen. There's going to be, like, a tipped pass. Or they're going to intercept it, get hit, fumble. It felt like the vibe felt like, okay, I've seen this movie before. What is this ending? How does Tennessee just lose in tragic, devastating fashion? But it just didn't happen this year.
Let's go to the beginning of the game. I thought, what do you think about him receiving the ball? We win the toss. Billy decides to receive away.
Yep.
Offense has been struggling the previous 2 weeks. What did you think about that?
I thought I expected that. I thought you're going to try to use your offense to play defense. And by that, I mean, keep Tennessee's offense off the field. Right. You're throwing the ball. Clearly we didn't know, but clearly Billy Napier and the Gators thought they could throw the ball in Tennessee and showed that thought was right. But I think you take the ball.
He thought we could throw the ball on everybody, to be honest, like the way he's been. It ain't like he changed something to Tennessee. He's been pitching that bitch around the park regardless. he kept confidence and faith in the kid, man. That's part of his development. I think Billy spoke on some of that today, but he just kept confident. We kept saying run the damn ball and still go buy that shirt, and we still want to run the damn ball. It looked like Billy believed in regardless of what we saw on game day, he believed in what AR was as a passer because he kept doing it, and we was a little confused. Paid off this game because we couldn't run the ball between the tackles. Shout out to that run the damn ball.
Yeah, this is your quick reminder. If you're following us on YouTube or listening, go visit stadiumandgale.com/shop, and we have two run the damn ball shirts. We have the run the damn ball and then the run DMC run TDB shirt. So available for you, very inexpensive. let's run the damn ball. Anyway, Nick, back to you.
I thought that was not even aggressive, but I thought it made sense. If you're going to use your offense to play defense, like Tennessee, it's an IndyCar. There's no slowing them down. And year two in Heupel's offense, they are conditioned to the point where they can do that. Even those big offensive linemen like Gerald Mincy is running up and down. My guy was jacked up to play Florida. It's just in Florida's face the whole time.
Yeah, my favorite part is when he tackled Brent Cox a few times, but that was a different subject.
Yeah, that's not holding. That's just tackling.
Yeah, no. I will say this: the refs, you know, you can blame a lot on the refs for this game, but I will say that they were terrible on both sides of the ball.
Refereeing quality is definitely on the decline. Like from a pace of game standpoint, when they call in some of these reviews and some of these timeouts that they're doing themselves, I'm like, yo, they just killed the whole pace. I understood Billy. We'll talk about that later with Billy getting upset. But I think refereeing quality is definitely on the decline. This shit gets worse every week. And it's across the NCAA, not just on our games. I think it's been a bad product. But anyway, Nick, go ahead.
I think Billy showed you right away what the night was going to be, what the day was going to be. First drive, go for it on fourth down. Second drive, a lot of people are upset.
First play was an RPO pass. Like he threw it right out the gate. He hit it short.
Bro, and AR ripped that ball. I mean, that's not like an NFL tight spot, but that's a tight spot to fit that ball into between two defenders, over a linebacker between two defenders. He ripped that. He showed you right away. He was gonna gamble. Went for it on fourth down, got it, and then you're in field goal range. You have the opportunity to take 3 points. Quiet the crowd a little bit. The crowd was fantastic. It was a great environment in Neyland Stadium. I've been witness to some awesome, awesome crowds and stadiums this year.
I thought we handled it pretty good too, man.
Absolutely. And then you go for the second one. Do you take the points? I think right then and there you saw that he was going to be aggressive. Florida went for it 6 times. I couldn't find the last time Florida went for it 6 times.
I like it, man.
I don't know if we ever have. That would be a very unique circumstance.
The last time Florida completed or went for it 5 times was against Tennessee, actually. And they went 4 for 5, I think. So Florida goes 5 for 6, converted their last 4. But I think he showed you right away, like, hey, we're going to be aggressive. And despite how down we have been as a podcast, as individuals, as fans have been on play calling and stuff like that, I think that aggressiveness shows – just the level of trust that Billy has in his game plan and his players to execute it.
Yeah, I don't have a ton of issues with the game planning from Saturday. There's obviously some execution things that could have gone a little bit better. Obviously, Florida struggled to run the ball the same way that they did. Our offensive line, I think, struggled a bit when it came to opening holes and giving players the opportunity or giving running backs the opportunity to move the ball. But I was pretty pleased, especially after the last few weeks, from a game planning perspective, that Florida had a pretty good game plan put together. And unfortunately, you just leave a couple things, right? On the first drive, you convert the first fourth down. You don't go and get the points, and you miss the second one, and you leave down. You have the unfortunate turnover by Anthony Richardson on the fumble where you lose points and you're in an opportunity. But I do think that Florida had an opportunity to win this game from the offensive side of the ball. It was just the defensive part that really hindered them. And one of the things that I do want to talk about as well is we've got to stop returning the football. We are atrocious at returning kicks.
Or get somebody back there that can actually return it. I don't care if you got ETN or one of the backs, you're not getting enough carries back there. And they take a gamble coming out of the end zone, but number 3 trotting out of there at a light stride is driving me up the wall, bro. As soon as he leaves the end zone, I'm like, oh shit, every time.
But it's not even that. It's like you're not disciplined enough to not hold, to not block in the back, to not get a penalty. So even if you are returning the ball to the 25, you're doing something stupid. One of the other 10 guys doing something stupid that's setting you back 10 yards, 15 yards.
Did I see that we've had 3 penalties on kickoffs this year?
I think 4, 3 might be right, but I think 4.
I think it's 3. If you're big into advanced analytics, they have Florida losing almost 4 points in the game in expected points added. They were minus 3.9. Special teams as a whole was minus 6.43. So that's a touchdown. Not converting on field or not kicking field goals. Not being able to flip the field as much on punting. Obviously, Tennessee didn't punt the entire game. And then kickoff return, nearly 4 points. So if you're a big analytics and stats person, like Billy Napier says that he is, almost a full touchdown on just bad special teams. Bad game changers.
They literally put a rule in that you could fair catch a kickoff to discourage you from running the ball back.
Yeah.
Just throw your damn hand up in the air, catch the ball, start at the 25.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. I think
Brandon James ain't coming out of the locker room. So
you don't need Brandon James. You just need somebody with like a burst, pause. Just a nice just kick out of the end zone, bro. I just think number three shouldn't be back there returning kicks, man. No, nothing to him. He's just being asked to do things I don't think is in his skill set, whether it's running a jet sweep or doing kickoff returns. Get him off of that stuff, man.
Yeah.
Also think we got the fourth down. I think our third down play calling needs to be better, man. Some of the third down play calling left me scratching my head, man. And I think we call better third downs. We could prevent from taking the risk on fourth downs because that could come back. It is a gamble, but what we're winning on a little bit here, but it's a gamble. So call better third down plays, man. Some of them third down plays was egregious. And I thought we should have ran on the edge more, but overall, the game plan was solid. We needed to protect the ball better, but another coaching decision was coming down to halftime, right, with the timeout when we had them pinned.
That's an aggressive call.
I like it.
It's aggressive because Tennessee has three timeouts, but they're backed up in their own end zone.
A minute 43 on the clock.
If Brenton Cox comes up with that sack, I mean, he had Hooker dead to rights. I mean, give Hendon Hooker credit. That's a really good football player. He was elusive. Made something out of nothing a lot last Saturday. But if Brenton Cox gets that sack, you're Gucci. You're getting the ball back. You should put 3 points on the board at minimum.
Or, I mean, we're not mad at it. I mean, he got to make that sack. But he comes in all out of whack, didn't keep his feet or anything like that, just came out of control. So Hendon Hooker breaks the pocket slightly to his left, and he finds a guy. I mean, trading gets beat on a 3rd and 10, gets up and points at whoever's behind him, I think was Shamar James or somebody like that. But right there at that moment, you got two seniors with an opportunity to give us a back to ball with a minute 43. Where they're punting from, we get the ball back at midfield. One of these guys got to make a play.
Yep.
I love the call being high. Like, it's 3rd and 10. We got two timeouts. We can go get some more points. We're up 4 on the road. Let's stop them and possibly go get another 7 and go up 11.5. You know, I like that gamble. You got to make that gamble, especially in that type of game. If we didn't come with a good pass game, we could have got blown out. If AR wasn't on point in this game, it would have got ugly.
Hey, listen, I said it on Twitter Saturday night. If your team scare money, don't make money. Don't cry when brave money loses some. Like Billy Napier showed you, this is him. This is him. He's going to take some shots. They've got a gang of nerds that are all into analytics and stuff. But at his
are they working? Are the nerds taking like restroom breaks, doing special team shit? Like,
yes. What are they doing? Yeah, no, they must be. They must like, be. They must be. They're going to get hot dogs at the stadium.
They gotta be, man.
But like that's it. Like he's gonna be aggressive like that. And I think it goes back to one, him being aggressive, but two, also if he didn't trust his players, he's putting trust into his players. And at some point, maybe at some point in this season, you're saying, listen, you've burned me 7 times. Now we're not gonna be as aggressive anymore, and we're taking those chances and those shots away from you. But right now he trusts his team, and you see that in the way he's calling games. And taking those shots, I didn't have any problem with the timeout there. Also, shout out to Ventro Miller.
Yes, indeed,
came my guy. Football, man. This game sponsored to you by Heart and Painkillers.
Yeah, let's go through some things here from a stat perspective. Anthony Richardson obviously has a great game. Throws 24 for 45 for 453 yards in the air. Does get his first two passing touchdowns on the season. Does have an interception at the very end of the game. But on top of that, he also – say what?
I said that's a wash.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. No, not something that truly right. should be counted. Had 17 rushing attempts for 62 yards and two additional touchdowns. So
it was the most total yards, most total offense by a Florida quarterback against an SEC opponent in school history, and the third most total yards by a player in Florida history, trailing only Tim Tebow in the Sugar Bowl. And I bet you cannot guess who has the most yards in Florida history in a single game.
In a single game.
Can you give us a hint?
Is Carlos Alvarez? No.
No. You will way more recent than that.
Way more recent than that?
Way more recent than that. And
it's all purpose or is it just
all purpose?
Solomon Patton or some weird shit.
Emory Jones versus Samford. 2020.
Oh, man. Oh, yeah.
I thought you were talking about real teams. I thought you were talking about the same situation.
Shout out to Dan Mullen for making that game so close that your starting quarterback gets to break records against an FCS opponent.
Shout out to Emory, man. He got a whole new he's like the interim coach specialist, man. He got that. He should start a career of like counseling quarterbacks.
Yeah, he's about to be on his, fourth or fifth head coach now.
Who, Emory?
Yeah. Danny Mullen, Greg Knox, Herm Reed, so fourth.
Yeah, Ventrell definitely saved us in that first half. I know we're going over some stats, right, Dan? Sorry.
Just no, you're fine. Just going on the offensive side of the ball, and then we'll definitely give credit where credit is due on the defensive side of the ball, and then we definitely have some things that we need to talk about. But just going over some more things, Gators do have 10 total drives. Averaged almost 10 plays per drive on average, just under 66 yards per drive. So the offense was humming throughout the game. A lot of explosive plays, definitely their most explosive game this season. What?
That's a humdinger. Hummer.
Yeah. We're bringing out the stats this week. Let's see. But again, offense, by far.
Offensive stats?
Yeah, by far the Gators' best offensive performance of
offensive
the season.
Line blocking struggled big time though.
Richard Garage burned the game film. Not a good day for Florida's left tackle. But if we're giving flowers out, Dan, Justin Shorter.
Give him more 50-50 balls. I mean, I've been saying that when he gets opportunity, he's been snagging them things out the air, bro.
Yeah, Justin Shorter, 7 catches on 10 targets, 155 yards. Ricky Pearsall, 5 catches on 6 targets for 103 yards. And then you saw Keon Zipper, 3 catches for 62 yards.
Oh, he got some bully ball, man. Shout out to Zip, man.
Yep. Overall, I mean, Trent Whittemore had a decent game. Dante Zanders had a couple catches. Ty Bowman got involved in the – I don't know how to pronounce his last name. I apologize.
Ty Bowman.
Oh, sounds a little racist, but
– No, it's Eminem.
I understand where the chicky comes from. I don't think that anyway. But overall, I mean, offensive side of the ball moved the ball really well. Probably the first time you saw some chinks in the armor of the Gators offensive line, though.
Yeah, not a great game. I'm gonna pull up the PFF grades that I got. I think if we're giving flowers, we need to give flowers to Justin Shorter. Like, that's the kind of game where I mean, I've been really critical and hard on the Gators.
The wide receiver room is definitely not an issue. Yeah, I would say.
You know, shout out to Kerry Colbert.
Yeah. I mean, you gotta give these guys some credit. So they playing okay. We're missing. It's not the usual Florida talent at wide receiver. Let me correct some things. But when I watch the games, I don't think like that's the major issues. I think if we keep take care of the ball, we'll be fine on offense. Interior blocking and running between the tackle was the issue. I thought we should have ran more on the outside this game. Design runs with the quarterback on the edge are set up beautifully. Billy doing their thing was setting those up. Just got to make right decisions. AR decided to go against the grain at one point and fumbled the ball at a key moment in the game. But I thought our outside runs was better this game and more should have been called. In between the tackles, we got to work. I don't know what it was this week, but this week we weren't able to pop off big runs between the tackle like in the past.
Yeah. So looking at the grades for the offensive line, Kingsley Egwukon, according to PFF, had the best game from the offensive line. Then Richard Garage, then Osiris Torrance. According to them, Torrance's worst game of the year. He had previously been the highest rated interior offensive lineman in the country.
I think he was the highest ranked offensive lineman, period, going into this game.
I don't know if it was whole offensive line or just interior.
Because he's not either anymore.
Yeah. Austin Barber struggled a little bit with a 58.6 grade. And then Ethan White was, of the 21 players that played on offense, Ethan White ranked 20th. Only ahead of Dante Zanders.
So I'd have to I'm going to put a big caveat on that I'd have to rewatch the game and watch that for that. I do think that PFF can struggle sometimes giving out grades and knowing what assignment football is. I thought that Austin Barber didn't play too bad. I don't think that Richard Garage was your second best offensive lineman in that game either. I think Rashard Torrance did, or Osiris Torrance, pardon me, was probably a better blocker, but I think overall, like you said, Silk, I just don't think the scheme was there for them to be able to move the ball. Tennessee had a plan every time the Florida ran the football, and we didn't do much to accommodate a change in Tennessee's defensive front to be able to move the ball, because Florida only averaged 3.54 yards per carry, which is well below what they were averaging in the season leading up to this point.
Right. But that power run on the edge, when he's pulling a couple cats, just three, four guys, and like three guys in front of AR. I know they don't want to run him. They worried about his durability, but that looks like something we probably see more of from a quarterback if he was healthy. And the play calling was a little bit different this game. It had to be because Tennessee's a different team. So I got to see some flexibility in Billy changing up his philosophy from game to game. Which is still an ongoing thing, dog. We're trying to see if we think he needs an OC. I know a lot of fans got opinions on that, but I'm not mad at the play calling right now. So no play calling is going to be perfect. We always going to have some type of complaints, man, because we fanatics and we cover all of this. But from an overall standpoint, it could get more complex, but I don't know how much my quarterback can handle right now. You know, he's developing them. It's going to be an up and down thing. We got to see AR play great. Not great, but he showed us a lot of promise game one. And then two and three, he struggled to come back, to go on the road to Tennessee. The underdog role again, he embraces that role. I like that. But it's developing a quarterback. It's going to be ups and downs. You can't bench a guy and bring in the backup who has like a lower ceiling and hamper his or hinder his development. So I like the way Billy's handling it so far, man. I didn't like the way Dan Mullen handled his development publicly or with the depth chart. So I do like the way Billy's handling it so far.
Man. I'll say this. We are nowhere close to Billy hiring an OC. I won't go as far as saying, you know, Dan Mullen won't fire John Hevesy, which turned out to be wrong. But like, we're nowhere close. Like, you can keep screaming it. You can keep tweeting it. You can keep putting it on message boards. We're not even like 2 years away, if it's ever going to happen, which I don't think is going to happen. Billy's going to call plays.
Yeah. Let's chat a little bit more about that. But let's give a shout out to our friends over at Home Field Apparel. Visit them at homefieldapparel.com. Promo code Stadium and Gale, all one word. Get 15% off of your order. Hoodies for the fall and winter. A lot of Florida Gator stuff on there. Still, what, 5 more home games to go to and wear them to. So go visit alumni. All right. Whoa. Homefieldapparel.com. Use promo code Stadium and Gale and get 15% off of your order. Also encourage you to visit Alumni Hub, but we'll talk about them here in a few minutes. Play calling as a whole, Nick, I know that you mentioned about the offensive coordinator and about building confidence with Anthony Richardson. obviously some different changes we would have liked to see in running back. But in terms of the game overall, what did you think? And then did you enjoy the kind of the offensive performance that was put out? In my opinion, this was an opportunity that Florida had to win this game. You don't have a couple of those turnovers. You convert maybe on one of those fourth downs in their zone. Florida should be in prime position if you're scoring 33 points in an SEC game to be able to win that game. But any final thoughts on the offense?
I think the offense is bullying my guy Jeremy Crawshaw. Only gets one opportunity to play in the game. Does exceptionally well, pinning Tennessee at the one. I think my guy needs more shots, more opportunities.
To punt? No, I don't think so, Nick.
Yeah, yeah.
It was a hell of a punt, though.
Hell of a punt.
It was a hell of a punt.
Down to the one.
He had a shank the week before that we didn't cover.
Hey, whoa! What are you talking about? Saying, what have you done for me lately?
I don't like to put my game in the hands of soccer players, man.
Lately, he's a rugby player. First off, they don't play. It's not a big soccer country.
Also, real fake football.
Yeah, I thought it was a really good game. It started off weird, you know, turnover on downs, fumble, missed field goal, tipped. I don't know if it was tipped or just missed. So starts off weird, but then you're going, I mean, just back and forth. For the entire game, you know, it's 3-0, 3-7, 10-7, 14-10, 17-14. Florida needs to get better, and I'm working. I haven't crunched all the numbers yet, but Florida needs to get better in the middle eight. This was the first time Florida scored any points in the third quarter in a game this year, right. And they've previously been outscored 24-0. So let's see, Tennessee scored.
Florida only had 5 plays in the middle eight.
That's a problem.
Yeah,
that's a problem. Florida's been really, really bad in the middle.
Tennessee had 22 of them.
Well, you get the long drive right before half, and then you get the ball back.
Yeah, so
that'll do it. But the middle eight's been really a really big struggle for Florida. But if we don't have any non-fans listening, but if you're not a fan of either team, I think you would have enjoyed watching this game. It was just back and forth. Clearly, some bad blood between the players. Like, this was college football at its best. 100,000 people. The teams didn't like each other. The fans didn't like each other. And it was a really good game that came down literally to the last second.
We should have beat them, man.
Yeah.
I'm going to go ahead and say that. I thought we were prepared very well to go on the road and win this game. I think Billy and the staff did a great job of putting his team in position. The game plan, they were right there. You just got super seniors making mistakes, bro. That's all it was. Blown coverages, man. Like, no real effort, no real resistance to the end zone. Just guys that have been around the program forever just blowing a big opportunity for these guys on the road. That's what we saw. Like, even from the 3rd and 10, every situation we're bringing up, was these so-called gambles that they're doing, they all were in position to close out and make plays and win the game. But you just got guys that's just not making those plays. And even when Zero got sat, I got to see young Kamari Wilson come in, come downhill, and actually smack somebody. I got to see my defense get a turnover and not blow an assignment and just give up 60, 70-yard plays. These are huge plays. You're not talking about giving up a 10, 15, 20-yarder. 60, 70, 80 yards of real estate on the road is just you can't give up and win the game. And we just kept seeing the same mistakes of Trey Dean standing in the backfield looking for God knows what, because there's no running back coming out. There's no tight end. There's no underneath coverage. The guy he's supposed to be on is streaking down the field by himself.
He said, in some leaked screenshots of DMs and texts, it seems like he said that we were playing zone, and it looked like 10 guys were playing man, and Trey Dean was playing zone.
No, he think we done.
But I'm not in the room, so I don't know.
No, you know. That was man.
Not in the room. Man,
everybody.
Not in the room. I don't know.
I ain't in the room.
Shout out to Devin Moore. Devin Moore, most snaps he's played. I thought he played really well. He gave up the one touchdown. But, I mean, that guy was like – he started on the hash. And Tennessee, I don't know if you guys noticed this. Heupel has – they create space. Like, their X receiver is, like, lined up a foot, 2 feet off of, right. the sideline. Like, they're way wide. And he literally chased the guy all the way across the back of the end zone. But I thought Devin Moore played the most snaps. He leads the Gators freshman in snaps with 69.
Very good.
Wouldn't mind seeing more.
More.
Pun intended.
More.
All right, let's stop. 24 is not playing like the worst cornerback football in the world or anything like that. Thought I would see more 8 this week. Is everything okay with him in the club, or is he what's going on with 8?
Despite what Billy said, I think fractures can turn into breaks. Make a fracture worse. I think his hand is not going to get better. He's going to have to get surgery after the season. He's going to be in the club all year. He made that decision. So shout out to Jalen Kimber. Jalen Kimber missed last year with the shoulder.
I'm sorry. How many?
He's 11 snaps. I think his hand's going to get worse and he's going to get surgery after the year, but he made the decision not to get surgery when he broke it the week before Utah, cause he wanted to play. So shout out to him. It can't feel good.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit more about the defense, but let's give a shout out to Alumni Hall. Visit alumnihall.com or visit them on Archer Road. The best merchandise for men, women, children, and game day accessories. Nike, Jordan Brand, Peter Millar, whatever suits your fancy. Again, alumnihall.com or Alumni Hall on Archer Road and visit their new expansion. Nick, I want you to let's break the defense back into kind of position groups. We'll go into secondary. We'll then go into linebackers and we'll go into the defensive line. You mentioned Jalen Kimber. We talked about Devin Moore. I thought Jason Marshall had a decent game, but you have to point to a lot of blown coverages by the Gator safety groups as to reasons why the Gators gave up so many big plays. In terms of explosive plays, about 10% of Tennessee's offense was considered an explosive play. So ultimately, very tough to win when you're giving up those kind of plays. Averaged 11.26 yards allowed for every time that Malik Hooker dropped back, and almost are just a hair over 8 yards per play, and succeeded on 60% of their offensive plays, which puts them in the 99th percentile of games played this season.
Not a good performance from the defense, but like I think Tennessee's going like just the way their offense is with Hendon Hooker.
Defense playing all right, man. Just cutting like, up
like, ahead, man. I think Tennessee's just going to get theirs on a lot of defenses this year. The style that they play with that quarterback being the general leading it, they're going to get theirs on a lot of teams. Did I say Malik Hooker?
I would like to know what their running back rush for. I understand he got off and he's a mobile quarterback. He did some things with his feet. But I don't think the defense as a total whole played terrible. I thought our linebackers I don't know if it's a youth movement there. What they going to do there? Shamar James is showing a lot of promise. I'm not feeling great about school. I don't think he's playing terrible. I know development got to happen, right? But our middle linebacker play for this season is got to like find some type of traction outside of Ventura Miller, right?
Yeah, Jabari Small had 19 carries for 90 yards. One of those was a 39-yard run. And Jalen Wright had 10 carries for 25. Each of them scored a touchdown as well. Hendon Hooker had a rushing touchdown too. First off, shout out to Ventrell Miller. You're playing on a fractured foot. You're making a decision. Hey, it's my 6th year. It's my last opportunity to go play Tennessee. I'll deal with whatever pain I have to deal with. He had to leave the game and go to the locker room after the play where I think there was like a missed tackle in the backfield and Hooker goes off and Miller came from the other hash all the way over, makes a tackle on the sideline. He was down for a while, went to the locker room, but is able to come back. I think it's almost a blessing in disguise. As much as Ventrell Miller is helping you, like Shamar James is working himself. He's already got 3 starts. He's working himself into a starting role by the end of the year.
I call him starting before Tennessee, right?
He will certainly be a starter next year, and you're getting valuable reps from him right now and valuable experience.
I think that you have 3 starters for next year already penciled in from the young freshmen right now between Kamari Wilson, Shamar James, and Devin Moore. And I think all 3 of them are playing great ball. When Trey Dean got sat, I don't remember. I think it was in the 3rd quarter.
Or both?
Sat. Or he was sad. Actually, I don't know if he was sad. His attitude reflects probably otherwise, but when he was put on the bench, Kamari Wilson, I thought, came in and played really well. They didn't allow a score on that drive, and he had some,
and then they bring some
game-changing plays.
And then they bring zero right back out.
They sure did. Yep. Yeah.
And the offense coordinator said, barbecue chicken alert.
Barbecue chicken alert.
Barbecue chicken alert, man. And they barbecued my man up again. Yeah, like you said, when they took zero out of the game, Kamari came in. He came down that downhill, and I haven't seen anybody run the alley around here since Keanu Neal left. And my man Kamari came down and showed some aggression, and like he want to be a SEC safety.
Yeah,
and he didn't take any photo snaps after the tackle, nothing. He didn't do no type of photo shoots, Nick.
Yeah, right. No, back he didn't, to the didn't make any hand gestures. Didn't let people know. Where he was
from. Bad for the NIL brands. Bad for the NIL brands. You gotta promote yourself. Gotta promote yourself on the field, Silk. That's all we're doing.
Get out of here.
We're gonna chalk this up. We're gonna chalk this loss up to an NIL deal gone wrong.
I don't think he texted anybody about his play last night either. So shout out to that, man. Give me five at safety. I just want to see the young boy. I want to see Devin Moore as well. You mean I've seen some flashes of these guys. We got two strong safeties playing safety right now, and neither one of them is strong. So give me some young boys.
Yeah, I don't like to harp on individuals that are out there playing, risking their body, but Florida's got to do something different. It's just not working. I don't know the alternative, because you can argue, and this is Nick's favorite thing, is there's a reason that they're playing and not the person behind him. And maybe Kamari Wilson doesn't know the playbook as well. Maybe he still struggles with certain things.
That before.
But I'm just – it's been the same thing for the last 4 or 5 years, right? I just don't see any promise. I don't see – I see regression, and I just don't think it's because of bad coaching. I think that Patrick Toney's a good coach. I thought that their safeties coach last year, whose name's escaping me right now, obviously has a good background. But we're struggling a lot at safety.
Down the middle.
Yep.
All the way down the middle. Like, and that's a bad place to be struggling defensively. If you're struggling at linebacker and safety, bro, what do you have?
Yeah, you don't have anything.
Now that you can hang your hat on, man.
Hendon Hooker is going to be one of the better quarterbacks that Florida plays this year. He may even be the best statistically. You still have Stetson Bennett. You still have FSU's quarterback, Jordan Travis. You have a few others that are going to sling the ball. Nick, I know the face. I don't think Jordan Travis is a Hendon Hooker or Stetson Bennett type quarterback, but you still are going to have a quarterback that's going to want to sling the ball, and having zero back there with 22 or whoever else is back there is just a recipe for failure.
I don't want to make no excuses for our quarterbacks, our defense, but we have played nice little outside of USF quarterbacks. We've played some pretty good quarterbacks in this first.
Oh, Jerry, don't sleep on Jerry Bohannon. He's a nice quarterback too. They used him well. He ran all over Florida.
Yeah, he had must be in his Super Bowl because he laid an egg versus Louisville Saturday.
Yeah, well, that's Billy Napier said that was a really good football team who executes the ball well. And then they were promptly executed on the field the next week.
I tried to get a troll off saying that I thought USF would beat Louisville the next week after FSU struggled with Louisville and Florida struggled.
Yeah. That's a tough scene there for you, Dan.
I was wrong, but I just ignored it in the group chat and kept it moving.
That's how you guys do it.
Yep.
We have no comment at this time, and we're moving.
Oh yeah, no, we didn't even give a comment. We just said we didn't give a no comment comment. We just kept it moving.
Florida has played what? Number 7, number 11 at the time, and what was Kentucky 20? So three of their first four games have been against top 20 opponents. It has not been an easy road, and I think, though, if we're being honest with ourselves, if you're looking at 2-2 in September, that's not too far off from what I thought they'd be.
4-0, man.
You think they should be 17-0?
No, I'm just being real. Like, I'm just like hindsight 2020. We're looking at these games, man. If Emory, I mean, it's the ups and downs, right? I just want to just be realistic with everybody. Like, look back on this, and we could very well be 4-0. We could be 1-3 as well. If you look at the Utah game, depends on how you look at it.
I mean, we could be 0-4, right? Right.
You could be
you're a touchdown away from Utah right. scoring at the end of the game, and you're not scoring a touchdown on your final drive against USF right. from being 0-4. But again, you're also close to being 4-0. These games are decided in the margins, and you know, Florida has two losses for what, 14 total points, 15 total points on against two ranked teams. So you have to imagine if Florida can get this win off against Eastern Washington, you know, Missouri doesn't look all that good. Vanderbilt doesn't look all that good. South Carolina definitely doesn't look like the team, you know, that a lot of people thought that maybe that Georgia game is, you know, maybe your only sure loss left, because Texas A&M doesn't look nearly as good as, you know, people thought that they might look too. Now there's still a long season ahead. You know, but Florida, I think, has showed some poise and moxie to be able to put it all together, but they still have yet to, outside of that US or that Utah game, to really put a complete game together on both sides of the ball.
Yeah, that was going to be my thing. I think, like I said, we could very well be 4-0. I think the two games between Kentucky and USF, I don't think we'll ever see we'll never see Anthony Richardson play that bad again.
No.
It seems like it was just weird vibes, and it was just that mental part of the game, something he had to shake. But I think going to that way to Tennessee helped him get some pressure off his back of the home crowd and gave him to that underdog vibe again. But I don't think he'll ever play that bad again this year. If he plays to the average or to his floor, I think we win those games. He played well below his floor both of those games, in my opinion.
If that's
he plays
what I was gonna to say. His floor
and take care of the ball, we're 4-0 right now.
That's not – the USF is not his floor. That's an outlier. You'll right. never see him look like that again. There was one play, the play where he fumbled. Damn, that's a bad read. I went back and I was watching the game. I was watching the game this morning, and Florida's got 5-on-3 blocking.
Bro, just takes it outside. That play they got set up like that, that was ready to go with him, man.
That was ready. That could have been 6. He tries to make something out of nothing when Walt, instead of waiting for that play to develop, turns up field and there's 3 cream school shirts right there. Just try to do too much, but we need to get back to the defense. We're bouncing around.
Yeah. No, I just got on the record for a little bit there.
Those were bars. I think that you dropped 40 bars there on AR.
So let's get into linebacker. I know we talked about it briefly, Shamar James. Oh, we talked a little bit about Ventrell Miller. Still not a great unit top to bottom. But what were your thoughts in the game on Saturday?
I really like Shamar James. I think he took 33 snaps, which is the most that he's played, including got the start. Scoob really didn't play much, only had 7 snaps in the game. I think he was dealing with a little illness throughout the week, but I have no problem with 6 being on the field at any time. I think not only is he making plays, he's going to make some mistakes, and you might get mad at him for a mistake or a blown coverage or a missed assignment. But I'm never mad at him being on the field because he's one making plays, got his first tackle for loss, and I think sack in this game as well. Never mad at seeing him on the field in this game, and he's only going to get better for the experiences he's going through right now. I'm good with him. Was a tough game for Amari Bernie. Don't think he played particularly well. I am still continually impressed with his chase down speed. Like, guy can run.
I'm not impressed by people that's always chasing something.
Hey, I'm not saying it's good that he's chasing. But when he's catching running backs 30 yards down the field because somebody else blew
it. Put him on the kickoff team.
Put him on the kickoff. Let him return kicks.
I don't even mind doing that than playing my linebacker position right now.
You're doing a position swap.
You might have more burst than him, though.
Well, we do have a super track question, and we'll get to that in a second, John. But Kevin Valdez asked, are you surprised that Wingo and Black have not played much? Certainly we do want to give DeJuan Black a shout out for the recovery of the onside kick late in the game. I still don't like the rule, not just because it affected Florida. I don't like the rule that you can't advance an onside kick. I think that that's silly, just like you can't advance a muff punt. I think that that rule is silly too. But overall, shout out to him. Great play there. But Nick, are you surprised, or Silk, are you surprised?
He was straight Jordan logo, like
Yeah.
Full extension, one arm out, just palms of football. I'm not surprised. I don't think DeJuan Black is a middle linebacker. I don't think you're using him and his skill set correctly by putting him at middle linebacker. And he's also a kid who's been who has played cornerback, nickelback, safety, edge rusher, outside linebacker, and now middle linebacker. Like, let him just and they're letting him just play one position. He moved to middle linebacker in the spring, but I don't think that's where he should be playing. So, no, I'm not surprised he's not playing there. And Derek Wingo, I don't know. I don't get it. He wasn't a linebacker in high school. He was basically an edge rusher. And then you move him here, and now he's playing middle linebacker. I have no inside information here, but I'm sure he cannot be happy with the way his 3 years have played out or not played. Right. While the years have passed, so might be a guy who, if the rest of the season goes this way, someone I'm definitely, as a reporter, looking at, okay, is he someone that's going to hit the portal?
Yeah, certainly there's going to be an opportunity for him next year with Bernie and Miller graduating, but, you know, obviously you slide James into one of those slots. I would not be surprised if Florida goes out and gets to the transfer portal to try to get some linebacker help because they desperately need it. But linebacker play is certainly still suspect. And while Amari Bernie certainly has a couple of notable plays this year, there still seems to still be a large gap in you know, the routine for him. Defensive line overall
weren't super. Chris McClellan, my spirit animal. Yeah. Shout out to number seven, bro. That's my spirit animal.
So I was just going to mention him. Weren't able to impact the game a ton. A couple of missed sacks, a couple of over pursuits. But I will say that Chris McClellan probably was the standout of that defensive line this week.
Big energy, bro. I like how he plays. It's hard to play a defensive tackle, especially in the SEC, right out the gate. So when Nick started speaking about him in camp time, saying like he's probably next up in line behind, number two in the depth chart, I was getting a little worried. But kid's holding his own, man, proving to be a good get out of Oklahoma on signing day. But he's pushing shit around in the trenches, man. Like you're feeling his presence when he's in the game. Not a whole lot of snaps, but when he's in, he's making plays, man. I think he made back-to-back plays in this game that were big plays. Number seven is a good number for us this year.
Yeah, big freshman vibes in the seven.
Yeah, man.
Not much more I can say to add to that. Silk, I too was like, is he going to be ready enough? But I think you're just going to see him continue to get better. He's going to be a dude for Florida. I'm not sure which coach we get credit for that, but whichever coach was the lead recruiter on Chris.
Yeah, I mean, because he committed to Florida when Florida didn't have a coaching staff.
Yep. We asked him about that, and he said, committed to the school, not a coaching staff.
Right, and I was a little nervous because I know Nick Evers had went to Oklahoma, and it came down to us in Oklahoma. So,
yep.
Kids is late. That we always tell kids or speak about kids should choose the program and the school and not the coaches.
School's going to be around a lot longer than the coaches are.
For sure. And that's what Chris did, man. But great game from him in the trenches. If he can continue to pick up, I want to see Gravon. I know he's taking on a lot of double teams and all that, but I still think the way he's lining up is a little weird. I think he's off the ball a little bit more than I would like. There's just a few things I'm not liking about and that's fine. It's all developmental purposes. But I think if these guys were thinking about going to the draft, I think most of these guys will be rethinking. I don't know their financial situations, but I think NIL-wise and just seeing how he's playing this fall, Anthony Richardson's playing this fall, I think next year is going to be different vibes. I think we could be setting ourselves up and developing ourselves up for a run maybe next year. But this year right now, is a youth movement. Let's get these boys in, especially on the defensive side of the ball. You spoke about Shamar James and his reps. I knew DeJuan Black and Wingo weren't natural linebackers. We spoke about this in the offseason and said Shamar James is going to get reps just because he's a natural linebacker and he plays with a different type of energy than a defensive back or edge rusher. You're trying to make a middle linebacker. It's just hard to teach that mentality. So I thought Shamar was going to jump these guys regardless. I think you're going to see some more of that if they just get the NFL, because I don't care what nobody say. Billy is still thinking about Trey Dean's NFL career.
It's hard not to. You know, it's a lot of money on the table. It's more than just coaching and business. These guys, they know these guys' personality. I know you want to play the absolute best players, but I'm pretty sure they got his pro prospects in mind.
Yeah, no, for sure. Sorry, while you were talking, I was just looking up some of the true freshmen that played, especially on the defensive line. Tyreek Sapp, I thought, had a pretty good game. There was a couple plays that he was very
Justin Boone was really good. Disruptive.
Yeah, disruptive. Jalen Lee played a little bit. Scooby Williams played a little bit. I know we're going over defensive line. Chris McClellan, 18 snaps, like you said, Nick. And then a young guy, Justice Boone, not a freshman, but you know, he had 33 snaps. So I think when you look at this defensive line, you're seeing a lot of the disruptive players being younger guys that should be here for quite some time. You know, again, Brenton Cox, I think that he's having a better overall year than maybe he's had before, but I still think he's very much a one-trick pony, kind of still struggling mm-hmm. with the over-pursuit. And, you know, probably the biggest thing that I still see him struggling with is contain. There was a number of plays where he had the opportunity for a tackle or a sack or, you know, a tackle for loss and just missed it due to a lack of contain. And, you know, even if it's not the biggest tackle or the biggest sack, you know, limiting them to 2 or 3 yards is a hell of a lot better, you know, than allowing them to get 8 or 9 yards. And that's still the biggest thing that I'm seeing out of Brent Cox.
What are you hearing from Lord Summerall? Are we, Nick, are you shocked by the lack of his name and reps being called?
No, I think Antoine Powell earned that. I mean, listen, Antoine Powell looked really bad in coverage.
Whoever decided to send 52 in coverage need to do up downs.
I don't think. You got Patrick Tony doing up downs.
Yeah, you
got
to do barrel.
I got Patrick Tony doing barrel rolls. You know, 2 lengths of the football field.
I think that's just more scheme on Tennessee's part than you know. If you've seen Antoine Powell, you know that you're not trying to get him in coverage. I think Tennessee schemed it to get whoever was playing Jack. I think Antoine had been in the game for a couple plays at that point. He was schemed into coverage. That's not where he needs to be. Other than that, he outplayed Summerall, him and Cox outplayed Summerall in the spring and in the fall. So I thought that was the depth chart 1, 2, 3 there. And Brenton Cox is playing an unbelievable amount of snaps. So like, you're not even getting much opportunity for those other guys at that position. And then when you're getting to third and longs, you're going with Tyreek Sapp playing inside. So you're getting an extra end instead of a Jack in there. So no, I'm not surprised with Lloyd. It's only 4 games in. He was already in the transfer portal. I think there will be more opportunities for him next year. He has transformed his body. He doesn't look like a small forward anymore. He looks like a football player. But I'm not overly surprised that he's not getting the, you know, reps zero, on defense right now.
Yeah, 0 reps on defense.
Yeah. But playing a ton on special teams.
Playing 11 snaps on special teams.
There were only 11 snaps on special teams.
Chief Porter said 14, so I'm not sure what's right or wrong. He's not in your article or you on the podcast, but
just me in general.
Just you in general.
You're muted, so
it was for a good reason. I'm glad I was muted.
Save yourself
for sure.
Sap play. Jay Douglas, a couple questions here. Is Gervon and Jason Marshall overrated or young and still developing?
You think Jason Marshall's playing bad football?
That bomb he gave up, bro, you tip your cap. Yeah, hey.
Yeah.
Nice connection. They're going to replay it. The catch was unbelievable.
Yeah. Hendon Hooker is number 4 in Heisman odds right now, and sometimes football players just make football plays, right?
Dan, we 86 to the Heisman talk. The Heisman.
Dan put that curse on it, man. So I like Dan bringing it up for
bringing it back. Yeah. So I know I think that Jason Marshall's playing very good. I think he's playing good football. And then Gervon Dexter, it's tough for a defensive lineman to truly. I don't know if he's impactful. as many people thought, but I also think it's tough to grade somebody in a vacuum if they're being double and triple teamed, the impact that they make. There's very few huge impact players. You know, Ndamukong Suh is one of them that's going to be able to break off all of those. So I don't think that Gervon Dexter is overrated. I just don't know if he's maybe as impactful as people thought that he would be.
I would say this. I think pro scouts is going to want to see him face double teams better, right? Just because you do it in college, don't mean you're not going to face double teams in the league. I think when he faces double teams, linebackers technically should feel better and do their job, but I think he can handle those double teams better. He just got to work on some things. I think right now 21 is handling double teams better when he get them. Yeah. He's a bigger body. He does things different, two different defensive tackles, but that's what I'm seeing for Gervon. He's getting a lot of attention, as he should, as a five-star guy. He has the ability, so the offensive lines are going to key around him, especially with the run game. And he's just got to put more shit in his repertoire to be able to deal with double teams, especially with trying to go to the pro level.
I like the French you put on that.
Yeah, so. say it again.
Repertoire.
My guy's in Paris.
I'm listening to the audio book, and that's how the guy on there says
repertoire. No, you're not saying
it. Je parle français. I like it.
I can't do all that. I like it, Dan. Yeah.
Dan's in his own bag. I think Gerv is probably dealing with some stuff also physically. Also, you're getting double teamed and triple teamed. I think 21, like you said, I think Desmond Watson is handling that well. I think he is handling it well, but he's not disengaging enough. Like, there's too many times where, like, he's handling his double team, and you like to see him disengage because he's big enough that if he gets just an arm on a running back, you can stop him. And I'm just not seeing the lateral quickness enough from Dez. He keeps losing weight. That's good. Like I said, I want to see him what he looks like.
Dez 350
pounds, 380 pounds. But the lateral quickness for him to disengage and get into the hole to affect a run, I think you're doing your job initially, but you can do better to finish it or to affect the play a little bit more. So I think he's playing well, but there's room for improvement.
Yeah, no, Nick, you said what I was going to say. I think that that Big Dez is a great north-south disruptor and east-west disruptor is where somebody else has an opportunity to make an impact or make a move on that that player. And unfortunately, you just can't ask a ton out of Dez right now to do a lot of that. Certainly, with some off-season, strength and conditioning, maybe next season we can expect that out of him. But I think so far what you're asking out of Dez is
I expect that the vibe on the off-season, man. Then come in, do
his thing, get in shape on the ball. This off-season too, but – yeah, he's a little too much jerky in his diet.
That's what I'm saying. That's exactly what I expect.
Damn it, Spence.
Yeah, you can't.
It's easy to blame Spence. Let's see. Sapp plays out of position too much. 9, 7, 21, and 92 should be able to handle the interior. I'd have to watch a little bit more.
Jalen Lee's not playing well.
Yeah, I don't think that Jalen Lee is
being. I don't know why 92 is being thrown into that mix. Jalen Lee's not playing good football right now.
Mm. Oh, there you go. Tay Douglas. Shoot your hate to negative opportunities.
I mean,
that's why seven is an opportunity because,
Chris McClellan is playing as much as he is because Jalen Lee's not getting it done.
Yeah. Any other final thoughts on defense before we get into the game on Saturday?
Do I have more thoughts on defense?
Potential game. Or on special teams or anything else in the game. This one was, I look at it. Tennessee was favored by 10.5 for a reason. Tennessee probably was the more talented team on Saturday. They probably should have won. If you play that game 10 times, they're going to win that game more times than not. Florida put themselves in an opportunity to win. A couple of costly mistakes. Nick, this is something we were going to talk about it before. Let's do a quick ad read before we get there, though. Visit our friend domehats.com if you are looking for some of the best hat wear on the market, whether it's some traditional Ike Riedel, in Quez hats, or maybe a Mr. Two Bits hat, or a Rex Scott Robbed hat, or maybe it's a hat from your favorite downtown or midtown bar in Gainesville. Check out domehats.com. Visit Stadium Gale, or visit domehats.com. Use promo code Stadium Gale and get 15% off of your order. Great products. The Stadium and Gale hats were from Dome Hats. They also do personal printing for yourself or your business needs as well. Nick, I know we touched on it briefly. Do want to talk a little bit about going for two during the game and about Billy Napier. I heard his press conference today and he dived into it a little bit more. But if you want to go over that, and then Silk, I want to get your thoughts on going for two as well.
Get Silks. I gotta pull my story up. I put my computer.
I'm not the greatest with math and all of that, right?
But yeah, super analytical. 100% analytical choice.
I like his analytical breakdown of it, of how it increases opportunities and help him choose his track better, I think he said,
yes,
in the wording. So I'm not mad at the twos. I'm not mad at any of the analytical decisions that they're making, because I get that's how they're going to operate. We'll see if the risk pays off. You're going to like pull your hair out trying to scream, hey, don't go for fourth down. If they're going for it on fourth, I mean, the nerd said, yeah, we're better off going for it on fourth here. It don't change the odds of us winning or losing the game. Let's go for it here. I mean, let's see what the computer says and does. I think that kept us in the game a little bit with some of that philosophy. So I'm not mad at it, man.
Yeah, you can't be mad when they convert on fourth down, when they go for it, when you're a little surprised, and then also be mad that they didn't get it when they could go for two, right? I mean, we had this discussion on a completely different sport, same topic with Todd Golden, right? Yeah. And I forgot who we were talking to at the time after Todd Golden got hired was, hey, you're going to have to live with the decision making, and that a lot of this is going to be analytics driven, and sometimes it's going to drive you mad, and a lot of times, hopefully for their case, it's going to work out. But Nick, go ahead.
Listen, this is just a small sample. If you're mad at the analytics that Billy's using, you're going to hate the Florida basketball program. So like that's what the program is based around. That's kind of where sports in general are going. I mean, baseball, I was a late adopter to like the analytics stuff. You know, I didn't need to know what a pitcher's spin rate was to tell you if he was a good pitcher or not. But that's what sports are going towards now. I wrote about it Saturday night about the analytics of it. I used a chart from 538 of how to decide when to go for two. And then Billy broke it down even more today. It was a completely analytic decision. And basically, you're going to have to go for two. So going for two the first time, the entire decision is based around winning in regulation. It's not, we don't think we can win in overtime. It's we're trying to win the game in regulation on the road. If you go for two the first time and you get it, well, now you still have to score another touchdown and a field goal wins the game for you in regulation. If you don't get it the first time, okay, well now we have to go for it again. I think college teams, the success rate on 2-point conversions is like 43%. You think if we have two shots at that, we're good to go. We're almost guaranteed to get one of the two. You have a very good percentage chance of converting one of two 2-point conversions. If you miss the first one, you have to go for it the second time anyway, and you think your chances are good. And then a field goal gets you to overtime. So that's the decision-making process. Those are the analytics that go into it. Billy was reviews all of that during the week and all the way up to, you know, the bus to the stadium. They have guys like Ash Pira on the sideline, other guys that are literally going through what is happening in the game, what are the current situations, what are potential situations, and they have this giant binder of potential situations and then the percentages and what the data tells them. So the decision to go for two when they scored that first touchdown in the fourth quarter was completely analytic driven. And I'll have a story up written about it more in depth because Billy talked for like 2 minutes about it today. So that's the decision. And I was sitting there in on the field in the end zone thinking, what are you doing? Just kick the field goal. But when you look at the analytics and listen, I'm a journalist because it was the least amount of math requirements in college. So that stuff's over my head. Took me longer to write my story on Saturday trying to figure it out.
I love knuckleball, man. I ain't gonna lie to y'all. I am a fan of analytics in sports. I just think you gotta have because everybody's gonna have nerds. You know, like every team's gonna have these analytical people. Nick Saban got them. Every staff has these guys, but on the guys that have a feel for the game, still gonna be able to make those changes in the moment and build programs and culture. All that still matters. But the nerd stuff in football, I love it. I'm not mad at him going for two. I thought the game was out of reach at a certain little moment there, late third, early fourth, and I was just like, man, here we go again. Hopefully these boys don't just fold. That's another thing, too, from that standpoint. They didn't quit. You know what I'm saying? Even with going into this game, I was like just entirely, not just during the game at some point, or if we get close, or if they get down two scores, I was wondering if they quit before they even got there, to be real with you, man. Just from watching the USF game, seeing the vibes of just the body language of AR at a couple some of these games, just like, man, hope these guys are still dialed in, still like focused on the bigger picture and the vision of the entire program, the season, all that, and see them going into Tennessee on the way they held up and the way they did things, man. I thought these guys showed some pride. We got an L coming out of there, but from a program standpoint, I've seen them guys grow up a lot. But analytics, I was saying all that to say this, the analytics kept us in that game a little bit on some of the stuff they were doing. And some big throws by AR. I do want to give my guy my flowers because he caught a lot of heat, man. He got a lot of praise that first game, but then he caught a lot of heat these last two, man. Guy made big throw after big throw after big throw. He missed some easy checkdowns. He ain't played perfect. He still got a lot to work on, but my guy made big throw after big throw after big throw. He looked comfortable in the pocket. He's not looking to just escape and run like he Michael Vick. He's looking to make passes. He's still a pass-first quarterback. Like, these 500 yards, only 62 of them was rushing. Mm-hmm. Like as great of an athlete he is, he's a pass first quarterback, man. So I'm proud of the way the kid played in front of 100,000. I just hope he keep getting better, man.
Yeah, that's gonna probably be the toughest crowd that he plays in all season. You know, you could probably look at Texas A&M to be another tough one. You know, obviously, you know, has a good game against Utah, and then you know, two rough games against Kentucky and South Florida. A lot of people, you know, were asking about Jalen Kitna. They were asking about the walk on. They were asking when Jack Miller was going to come in and play. Bro. Right, a lot of questions about Anthony Richardson. Kid came in, slang the ball well. You know, limited errors. You know, he's still in his fifth game starting as a quarterback, so he's still going to make some mistakes, and you can hope that he gets better from here. And sure, the turnover is costly, but this game is not on Anthony Richardson. Florida was in this game because of Anthony Richardson. They couldn't move the ball any other way, so definitely want to give him his flowers, like you said. So there was a question that we had earlier from John Wilcox, kind of related to quarterback, unrelated just in general. Nate wants to develop depth of experience, any insight how he would develop QB2 the way that they are playing. I think probably wants to develop QB2 in practice more than anything. But what's the status on Jack Miller, Nick? And then, you know, I don't know if the answer to that question is any other different than hopefully it doesn't happen.
As of last week, Jack Miller could hold and like throw a youth football. So the injury you have, that avulsion fracture is in your thumb. It's going to affect how you can grip things. If you have that kind of surgery and you're Jalen Kimber, you put a club on, you play. If you're Ventra Miller, you put a club on, you play. If you're a quarterback, you have to grip a football and throw it. He has not come back to practice yet. So I'll probably have updates on our website later in the week, but didn't practice Sunday. Isn't holding and throwing a college football yet. Jalen Kitna is getting a ton of reps in practice. The way Florida practices, everyone gets a lot of reps. Hopefully Billy Napier's not listening to this, but these types of games, are when you would like to get Jalen Kitna in. Like, Anthony Richardson does not need to be playing probably with 10 minutes left in the third quarter against Eastern Washington, and you turn the reins over and let Jalen Kitna spin it.
Man, shout out to all them. Who asked this question again? I forgot.
Which one?
The question we're answering.
John Appreciate Wilcox.
It. Shout John out to John Wilcox. Wilcox. Appreciate you, John. Appreciate the super chat. Match. My development is going like this in my mind, right? I appreciate AR struggling early in the season to get humbled. Because if he'd have went crazy those two games, we'd probably be talking differently right now. But at this point in his season, I don't see him flipping the switch where he just leaves and go pro, right? I think he ends up coming back. So
shout out to that. And I would love to have him back, and then that'll be enough time for us to get Lagway here from Texas, man. That's my developmental plan.
John Wilcox said AR threw balls away when there was nothing there. Yeah, thought good decision making. And then the fourth and two throw to Shorter was bananas. Yeah, again, hard to fault anything that AR did.
Boy, the kahunas, man. The balls on Nate to call that call, bro, man.
Fourth and 27 from your 20. Fourth and two from your 27. Ooh. You're like, you know what? We got one-on-one on the outside. Let's just throw a lob.
I'm going to tell you, he must not know this ain't Louisiana, boy. Because, boy, if he would have missed that right there,
what?
I don't care what the analytics say, boy. He had a for sale sign in his yard.
I was going to say that. Would it come home from 8 months on the job with multiple for sale signs on the front line? Yes, sir.
Yeah, for sale by owner.
It's time to go, man. So, shout out to the balls on that,
for sale by fan base. Can we make those two? Sale by fan base.
We'll pay the commission.
Yeah.
Hey, oh my
god. We're covering the closing costs. Don't worry about it, coach.
All right, let's get into a buy or sell segment. But before we do that, we've got a shout out to our friends at True Classic Tees. Visit them, trueclassictees.com, promo code SG25. You can make that super easy in your life by going to trueclassictees.com/SG25. Get 25% off of your order. Get free shipping with that as well. Great workout t-shirts, polos, t-shirts, whatever it might be. Great colors, great choices, whether you're the black, gray, white family or the light blue and pastels, whatever it might be, trueclassictees.com/SG25. All right, buy or sell segment from episode 196. That means we're just a couple away from episode 200. So we'll have to do something big for that. Silk, I don't think you won. I think we all got the exact same. Buy or sell from Wright Brothers Sweep, which is an elite name for a podcast title. Gators cover 10.5. We all bought and we all got that correct. The Gators rush for over 200 yards. We all bought, and of course, the Gators did not rush for more than 200 yards. The next, Gators passed for 200-plus yards. We all sold that. We were all wrong again. Obviously, the Gators do throw for far more than that.
Man, Billy listening to this segment and hating on me, man.
Yeah. ETN and Montrell Johnson get 60% of the rushes. Nick, you and Silk both sold that. You are both correct. I bought that, and I was incorrect. The Gators get 1.5 sacks. We all bought that, and they do not. And then finally, Silk and Nick, you both said the Gators would win. I said the Gators would not, unfortunately, win. So I get that, and you guys get nothing there. So we go 2-4. Each.
Wild that I'm the negative one and had all the same picks as Silk last week.
It's about
consistency. I want to address the fake news media who's painting me in this light when I'm the same as Silk.
No, bro. It's about consistency, right?
Yeah, I think you're consistently.
You can't come on here.
I'm clearly on an image rejuvenation tour. Just let it happen naturally.
But I'm a homer every week, bro. You can't do this part-time homer shit, man.
In and out.
Yeah, now while before we get into our next buy or sell segment, if you are watching us on YouTube, please do hit that like and subscribe button. Nick Negatore.
I like that. That's a great word.
That's a great name.
Go back to Nilk.
No, I like Nick. Nilk.
Nilk Negatore.
Back to Nilk.
No, we're not a couple, fam.
All right, so let's get into the Eastern Washington game. Eastern Washington right now is 1-2 on the season. They beat Tennessee State by one touchdown. That's Eddie George's team, I believe. By one touchdown to start the year. Then they get shellacked by Oregon 70-14 in game two, have a bye week, and then lose to Montana State 38-35 in what I'm sure was a good game to watch if you care about either team. So they are 1-2 right now. Let's see. I am just not, trying to
sleep. We are not going to schools.
Yeah, like, we are not going to.
No, we need to break this team down. We need to find out every play on this team because it's been a directional season, man. Like directional schools have been the buzz, bro. You can't go in this shit sleeping in. So let's find out what Eastern Washington. They got a writer. Let's call their reporters.
Yeah, we'll call their reporters. I will look. So if I'm on Google right now looking at the Eastern Washington Eagles football team, of course, you probably are familiar with them. They have a red football field. Colin Coward and Jim McElwain are alums. Josh Johnson is maybe a guy that you have heard of. He went to Eastern Washington. Can't find a ton on the Eastern Washington football program right now.
Very good.
Their tight end just turned 22, Blake Goble. So happy birthday. Let me see. I'm just pulling up some things here in real time. All right. So
That's pretty much the update we needed.
Yeah. So starting quarterback.
Happy birthday to the tight end. They have a red carpet. Let's go.
Yep. So their starting quarterback is a guy named Gunnar Talkington.
You got to watch a guy named Gunnar. Yeah, yep.
He's thrown for 10 touchdowns and has 3 interceptions. Micah Smith is their leading rusher for 162 yards.
On the season?
Eddie Roberson has 214 yards. He's their leading receiver. This is not ever good, but their defensive back, Eli Doyle, has 26 tackles and leads the team. And then somebody named – this guy might be interesting to you, Silk, Trey Weed. Leads the team in interceptions.
Why would that be interesting to Silk?
I like
just
that
putting name. It out there.
I like that name.
Okay.
Trey Weed.
His father had vision too.
So Chris Potter, appreciate you. They run air raid. They're as good as their QB.
Oh, man. So, you got to watch for these air raid. Tim Todd. I tried to warn Miami last week. They thought I was playing with the
Gunnar Talkington.
His name's Gunnar. They run air raid. We got Dan's zero throwing,
Dan's throwing stones in a glass house, talking about their safety leading the team in tackles. Florida's leading tacklers are one Trey Thaddeus Dean the third, 36, and Rashad Torrance the second, 35.
As we've mentioned in this show, that's just not something you want, Nick.
Not something you want. No, not a great indicator of a good defense when your safety's leading tackles.
All right, so let's do a quick buy or sell segment.
If you gotta start with played. Is the
so,
game being played?
Yes. So the first question is, and this will determine the rest, is the game going to be played buy or sell? Nick. Buy. Nick?
Yeah, I'm buying it. We're playing this game.
I'm gonna sell that it gets played. I wasn't even gonna be in the stadium. I was supposed to go to a wedding. In Aspen this Saturday, shout out to Jaime and Kristen. I hope I can make it, but flying out of Orlando on Thursday morning.
Are they Gator fans? This is a good weekend to get married if you're a Gator fan.
They're not. Hmm. She is not a Gator fan. He's a Miami fan.
So that's why they're playing. It'll be for him. 4 games into the season, they knew what would be happening.
Bye week as well.
So I'm hoping I can get out there. Flying out of Orlando to Denver does not look promising on Thursday morning.
I would say that probably looks pretty limited for you.
And honestly, in seriousness, looking at this storm and as it slows down, like you said, Dan, that means it's just going to pick up intensity in the warm waters in the Gulf. So, again, it's not. I don't expect it to be catastrophic in Gainesville. I remember the last time a game was canceled because of a hurricane. It was a beautiful day in Gainesville that year. But it's not about where the game is played. It's about getting first responders and emergency personnel to people who need it.
I saw a lot of very dumb takes, if I remember correctly, about it being sunny in Gainesville that day. And I think Danny Cannell was one of them. But there's a lot of really dumb takes about the emergency personnel that are needed. Yeah, I know. Very shocking. About the emergency personnel that are needed across the state and what goes into a team. No, No. And what goes into posting a football game from a travel perspective, from a security perspective, from an overall safety and an evacuation route perspective. Just the way that this storm looks right now, looks like it's going to cut across the state at some point, whether that's, you know, at Tampa, north of Tampa, at the Big Bend area, whatever that might be. It does look like it's going to slow down. So, I don't think that this game is going to be played. I think that if it was not Eastern Washington, they might make different accommodations to play it somewhere else. Certainly, I don't expect the University of Florida to fly up to, I don't even know where Eastern Washington is, Walla Walla.
Eastern Washington, man.
Yeah, it's just in Eastern Washington somewhere. So I just don't see that that happening. But
it's in Cheney, Washington.
Cheney, Washington. All right, so let's assume that the game, or let's not assume that the game gets played. But let's say the game does.
So you're selling,
I'm selling that the game will be played. Yes.
Okay.
But if the game does get played, buy or sell, that Anthony,
another hurricane upset on the way.
Yeah. That was good. All right, buy or sell that the Gators win by 42 or more points.
Is that the spread?
I know. I'm looking it up right now.
Daniel
spread. These games don't often have spreads on the normal sports books that you see online just because of the FBS versus FCS.
I'm buying it.
42 points.
Yeah.
Let's buy it.
Everything's going to get played. You might as well buy everything, bro.
Yeah. Oregon beat them 70-14. I think that Billy Napier is a better coach and Florida's more talented than Oregon. So I think that they can beat them by 42. But while we're here, let's just see if I can find a spread on the game. Doesn't look like it. But no.
Nope, 42.
Don't see anything. All right. Buy or sell that the Gators have another quarterback play in the game before the fourth quarter. Not due to injury, but substitute in a new quarterback.
I hope so. In the words of Kodak, I hope so. Yeah, buying it.
Bye.
Bye. I guess I have to. Bye. All right. The Gators get an interception in this game.
Bye.
Air raid. Gunner.
Buying it.
I'll buy it. The Gators get 2.5 sacks or more.
Buying it.
Buying it. I'm just gonna go off of what you guys say, so you guys can take a bigger lead on me.
Nick's only buying it because he don't think the game gonna get played, man.
Buying it.
All of a sudden, you're buying the game will get played. So make sure that you make.
No, not game. Buying that.
All right, boys. Not a huge buy or sell segment. I Florida should win this game handedly. They should be able to do whatever they want. To the Eagles, I believe, is what we determined their mascot was. Next week, we will have a better rundown of the game against, is it Missouri the week after?
Mizzou, for homecoming.
A nooner for homecoming. The Gators are bringing in Flo Rida as a part of homecoming. And then the week after is the LSU game, which
week is home? Which week is that again?
Missouri.
Missouri's homecoming.
If you look at the Sagarin ratings from Chris Potter, 28 point spread.
Hey, I'll seems take 28 low. Too.
I'll take 28. I'll take 42. Ooh, it's a lot now that I think about it. All right. Any final thoughts? We have one final ad read, and then we'll get out with the song of the week.
No. Is everything we're recruiting? I think recruiting buzz has been great as well. We'll give people more information on that next show. Right? But I think I like the recruiting energy that I've been hearing and feeling from just, you know, the back channels. I think we're trending for some new names and And it's going to be some flips. Also, the games are getting played. So I think Miami's going to be open season here in a little bit, man. That's part of – I think their ceiling is about 5 wins, to be honest with you, man. So it's going to be some opportunities over there.
I said it. The Cuban Ron Zook recruiting is going to be really fun for them.
Right, Taggart.
And then Zook
got him in. I don't think he's going to get these guys in.
He's going to get him in. The Cuban Ron Zook.
Ron Zook would have never lost to Middle Tennessee State. You should put some respect on my floor.
He lost to Mississippi. He lost to Mississippi State.
Broker.
Mississippi State is – that's allowable.
Mississippi State would beat the snot out of Middle Tennessee State.
I think Mario got a different product. I think the he's a recruiter, but nobody has proven that they recruit in Miami on a consistent basis in a long time. I think the lack of people in the stands, the lack of big wins, lack of facilities, all of that stuff is a problem down there. And I don't think Mario had this to deal with in Oregon. So it's going to be interesting to see. I think that's going to be open season a little bit. And most of his recruits ain't from that area, which is another problem. Kids are not going to travel far away from this. He hasn't made any local footing. I think it's going to be one of the issues. None of that's our business outside of, I think, there's some kids on that commit list that we're going to double back on.
A couple visitor news notes. Elijah Rushing, not making the trip, obviously, because of the hurricane. Who else? There's a 2025 quarterback, Colin Hurley, is planning on being at the game if there's a game.
I like him.
And then the number one safety, our number one safety, KJ Bolden, is going to be in Gainesville October 15th for the LSU game.
Like any kid is willing to drive through a storm to see this Eastern Washington game.
Hey!
I mean, you really love us. I'm like, you haven't committed on the spot.
All right, so in other news, former Gators defensive coordinator Jeff Collins, relieved of his duties along with the athletic director at Georgia Tech. Kind of surprised the whole thing didn't work out. Former Georgia Tech thought he'd be able to recruit well. Had some big recruiting wins pretty early with Jeff Sims and Jamar Gibbs. Obviously, Jeff Sims' experiment didn't work out super well for him. Jamar Gibbs goes to Alabama in the transfer portal. Doesn't work out, goes has a pretty rough go of it there at Georgia Tech. I'm sure he'll have no problem getting an offensive coordinator position or a defense coordinator position somewhere else. But
I think it's tough to recruit there, man. I think Jeff Collins is a good recruiter, but Georgia Tech isn't the easiest school to recruit for, man. And he had a lot of like roster flipping to do because that team was, you know, running Army offenses, wing T offenses, man. So he had a hard job regardless, man. I thought he could have had an easier slating at a different school in the ACC or a smaller SEC school. But I think Jeff Collins is a good coach. He just had a rough go at it because of the roster flip he had to do there and what he's up against recruiting with the academic standards.
Yeah. All right, well, let's give one shout-out to a new sponsor of our show, company called Vincero. So if you are looking for a premium lifestyle brand, watches, sunglasses, jewelry, bracelets, great place to go, stylish quality, and versatile. Vincero designs everything in-house, sources their own produces and sources their own material, pardon me, and then produce everything in small batches for men and women out there. Give them a shot. Visit VinceroCollective.com. That's VinceroCollective.com. Use promo code SG25. You will get 20% off of your order and free shipping. Great products. 30,000 plus 5-star reviews and named GQ's go-to brand for premium lifestyle accessories. So again, VinceroCollective.com, SG25 will give you 20% off of your order. Let's see. Who's got song of the week? Is it you, Nick?
I had it last week. So I think it goes to you.
I think it's or me. No, it's still-
I don't know.
I think Silk had it the last.
I had it before that. Yeah, it's on Dan.
You know what? Miami, the city of Miami, has been struggling a lot.
Not our Dolphins, Dan.
Not our Dolphins, though.
Not my Jags.
I'm sorry. Are they 3-0?
Yeah.
Ain't got to be 3-0, man. I got the best quarterback in the state, man, for sure.
The best team in the NFL resides in Miami, Florida, coached by the best coach in the NFL, Mike McDaniel, led by the best wide receiver core in the NFL. So in order to do that, let's play the new Pitbull and Daddy Yankee song called Hot. Yeah. If you've not heard this song, immediate flames, just straight fire.
Straight flames. Real quick before we get out of here, man, just my man Joe Hayden retired, man. Congratulations to a GOAT, one of the best to ever do it. A lot of our GOATs go to the pro and don't really perform on a high level. Joe Hayden held it down, man. So just, you know, congrats and happy retirement to one of the GOATs. Got him on the pitch, pain behind me. That's it.
Yeah. No, Joe Hayden was an incredible person. One of the nicest down earth people that you could ever meet. Great football player, hell of an NFL career as well. One on all sides or all facets of his career in high school, college, and in the NFL. Definitely a guy that you can look at is one of the best Florida Gators to ever play in the NFL as well. So congratulations to him. Shout out to the Miami Dolphins, best team in the NFL. If you've got an issue with that, debate the NFL standings, and we'll see you guys next week.
This year? You know, we be running down on y'all every time, man.
That was before.
All we do is beat the Dolphins, man.
Okay. Yeah, it's a new era.
And Noodle Arm Tootle. Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, Tootle. That's what I'm gonna call him. Tootle. Noodle Arm Tua. Yeah. It's gonna fold. That ain't gonna It's eventually you just run out of sauce with that noodle arm, bro. And that's what's gonna happen.
You're just like a Miami Hurricane fan. You're living in the past, talking about what the Jags did in the past to the Dolphins.
Yeah, I can't talk about the Jags past. It's miserable.
They have to come and see Yeezy Mike.
I gotta lie about
see Tyreek Cheetah Hill. Yep. They gotta come see Tootle.
Yep.
Kyrie locked him down. Shout out to Kyrie. Kyrie had a good game. Kyrie locked that.
The Dolphins threw 19 total passes in the game where they absolutely destroyed the Buffalo Bills.
Just a massacre.
Butt putting all, they still won.
Butt putting all.
That was y'all Super Bowl right there. Yes,
no,
beating the Bills.
We'll see them in Canada where they play in November.
It feels like a Super Bowl and y'all drop confetti and y'all swim in it. That's what it feels like.
So when we are we're 3 wins down, 17 more to go. Don't see us losing. Was looking at the record or looking at the schedule earlier today. Don't see a loss on the schedule. The Buffalo Bills were the number one team in the NFL until the Miami Dolphins absolutely took them to the woodshed. I like our chances to continue to do that to the rest of the NFL starting on Thursday with Joe Burrow and the Cincinnati Bengals.
Primetime Thursday.
On the Dolphins schedule. I like it, man. Dan think it's college, man.
Me, Dan, and Jeff Bezos watching on Amazon Prime this Thursday.
The only undefeated team. All the great teams come through the NFL. The Dolphins is going to be the one that matched the undefeated season.
That's it. Beautiful. Yeah, and this might I was talking to somebody earlier today. I don't know if the Dolphins will ever lose this roster that they have assembled. Certainly there's going to be some retirements, but with this roster, I love our chances of maybe going, 40-0, 60-0, who knows? Maybe
we'll be humble, but we dismantled the Rams out there, bro. I don't know if y'all was watching football and shit. But
no, we were busy popping champagne. Like I said,
the confetti.
Josh Allen, we'll see you in Canada in November to beat you guys again.
I think we're out of here. Same corner, same time.
Great discussion. Everybody stay safe. We'll see you next week.
Already, man. Girls in the club know the deal when we come. Daddy Yankee. Show us love because they know this worldwide. Playing skills. Let's ride. We're making it hot. We're making it hot. Dinero, dinero. Y no vamos a parar. We're making it hot. We're making it hot. Dinero, dinero. Y no vamos a parar. We're making it hot. We're making it hot. Dinero, dinero. Y no vamos a parar. We're making it hot. We're making it hot. Dinero.
cause you know that we with it. And if it's that fire, you know that we did it. Yankee Pit, we don't rap it, we live it. Siempre somos los dueños del juego. Billones, billones, empezamos de cero. Esto no para, esto sigue, sigue. Dale, Yankee, dile, dile. Hey. Dinero, dinero, ese ha sido el enfoque querido en el mundo llamado en los bloques. Yo creo en la higiene, los chavos pa'l bote. Lavando el dinero me hice un bichote. Puré pa' la calle, lo que tiro es puro. Toda la familia ya estamos seguros. Los tiempos duros no duran para siempre. Lo que dura para siempre son los duros.
When you think work, you think boots. You think boots, you think Ariat. You think grit, concrete, rain, and heat. And boots that never back down from any of it. You think comfort and durability that hold up on the job, off the clock, and every step in between. Because the day doesn't end when the job does. And from overtime to off-duty, you're thinking Ariat boots. Boots that show up, stand out, and always back you up. Now, it's time to stop thinking and start shopping. Find yours at Ariat.com or a retailer near you.
All right, remember, the machine knows if you're lying. First statement, Carvana will give you a real offer on your car all online.
False.
True, actually. Oh. You can sell your car in minutes.
False? That's gotta be...
True again. Carvana will pick up your car from your door, or you can drop it off at one of their car vending machines.
Sounds too good to be true, so true.
Finally caught on. Nice job. Honesty isn't just their policy, it's their entire model. Sell your car today, too.
Carvana.
Pickup fees may apply.